Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello, hello, and welcome to Food Network Obsessed. This is the podcast where we dish on all things food with your favorite chefs, food influencers, and Food Network stars. I'm your host, Jamie Sire, and today we have a serial restaurateur and West Coast chef talking about his cowboy upbringing and best lessons learned. He is a chef, entrepreneur, judge on Triple G, and captain of the West Coast on this season of Beachside Brawl. It's Brian Malarkey. Brian, welcome to the podcast. Your Instagram bio says chef, father, cowboy, and captain. So we thought it might be fun to kind of dive into each of these roles with you. Sound good?
Oh, I love it.
I love it too. All right. So let's start off with cowboy. You grew up on a ranch in Oregon. How did growing up close to nature, animals, and the coast really shape your perspective of food and cooking from an early age?
I grew up on a little ranch in central Oregon, Bend, Oregon, Redmond, Oregon, 100 acres, raised by my single mom. And I think that really defines me as a chef as I am today. You know, we raised our own cattle for the protein, for the beef. I rode horses before and after school. We had hunting rifles. It was the real deal. You know, it was a lot of fun. My brother and I had to change irrigation pipes and mend fences. And then in the summertime, it was off to Portland, Oregon to go visit my father. And he'd take us down to the Oregon coast where we'd hunt for blackberries and eat salmon and clams and oysters and the whole thing. So yeah, it certainly defines me. That Pacific Northwest upbringing really defines the way I cooked my entire career.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a Montana girl, also grew up on a cattle ranch. So you are eliciting a lot of childhood memories for me as well. I mean, you mentioned, you know, like some of the oysters and the salmon. What kinds of things do you think that kids growing up in Oregon or the Pacific Northwest get to experience that maybe other kids in other parts of the country don't?
You know, when you grow up in the country, and I think everything's changing as we have social media and stuff like that, the being connected to the land and your people and stuff. My best friend lived like 2 miles away, you know, and I mean, that was close. And so you really find a lot of things to do in nature and in time and the way that you spend your days. And it's really great to always get back to the nature and reflect and be quiet and relax. You know, I'm in San Diego. I don't know where you're at. Where are you at?
I'm in New York, but I lived in San Diego for a little while as well. So,
and yeah, you know, the a little bit of silence is great for everyone.
Do you have like specific memories always like growing up, like, you know, shucking your first oyster or cracking your first crab leg that kind of have stuck with you and maybe inspired, you know, your career later on?
This is going to be a little rough here, but
okay.
As a young child, my mom was dating a cowboy, John McFarlane. I mean, just the perfect cowboy name. Gentleman
sounds like it.
Cowboy hat on. He drank red wine out of the jug bottle, you know, roped. And, you know, we wanted a Christmas tree. We went out and cut down a tree in the back and stuff like that. But man, he gave my brother and I ropes when we were little. And he was like, go out there. There's a bunch of calves. Go rope yourself a cow, you know, get yourself a pet. And we caught Al. We loved Al. We fed Al, and Al was the best. And we kept feeding him every day. He's like, feed him as much as you want. Feed him as much as you want. And there came that reality one day that, oh my gosh, Al's not my best friend. Al's the future meal for us, you know? So that really kind of changed my perspective. And when I realized what happened to Al as I grew up and as I realized we raised a cow every year, every summer for the same exact reason, my rebellious nature was I would actually go into the freezer and steal like the T-bone chop, right? Like I knew the ones they wanted the most. And I'd go over to my friend Bill Olson. It's two miles away. I'd ride my little bike over there. And we had thawed that out and I would cook it for him and my friends. And that was us like, you know,
rebelling.
Yes. Given the big old finger to the establishment, meaning my mom and, you know, the whole system. And it really kind of inspired me and got me cooking.
Pouring one out for Al, you know?
Yeah, it was definitely pouring out some Kool-Aid for Al, you know?
I mean, speaking of which, who in your life like kind of started to nurture those culinary interests that you speak about?
I had a very different reflection on cooking. My mom, you know, she laughs and says I throw her under the bus literally every time I say this, but she was outside tending to the horses and the cattle and taking care of that. And I was learning how to cook when I was, you know, 6-7 years old out on the ranch. And then I'd go visit my father and he was into big meat cooking, always a roast going on. And there'd be like a can of green beans in on the stove. And I think he just did that. So he thought that he had something healthy going on, but it was always a big roast. And then my grandmother was much more of a society woman. And she was everything from finger bowls, like the old school days, like the Titanic and stuff like that. And very full scale service restaurant kind of food. It was absolutely beautiful. So I had a lot of different, from TV dinners to roasted meats to high-end dinners. I had a little bit of all of it.
And everything in between. So when you decided to pursue a more formal education at Le Cordon Bleu, how did your close circle, how did your family react?
Well, it all started when I kind of was down. I was a theater arts major at Santa Barbara City College. That's where all the smart kids go. I mean, when when you're kind of going down the ladder of last ditch efforts, that was where I was at. And my father came and watched me in a play. I was going to be an actor, you know, but I had a problem. I was only, I couldn't remember my lines very well, right? But I thought I could be a good actor. I'm a bit of a character. And he looked at me and he goes, Moonchild, because that's what he called me back in the day. He's like, Moonchild, you are one of the worst actors I have ever seen in my entire life. And I was like, I know, Dad. The problem was I knew. I was like, Dad, I just can't remember the lines, man. I just don't know. But I got the story, but I just don't remember the lines. He goes, why don't you do what you love? And I was like, what is that, Dad? I'm so confused. I'm a youth. You know, I'm not even 20 years old. I'm completely confused. He goes, every time I come around, you're cooking food for all your friends. You're making drinks for all your friends. And he goes, and everyone's having the best time. I was like, yeah, Dad, you want me to be like a professional partier? Like, how can I do that in life? This is my dream job. He goes, no, Moonchild, you got to be a chef. And I was like, what? He goes, yeah, you get to cook for people and throw the party every night. And I was like, yeah, there might be a pot of gold at the end of this rainbow, Dad. And I went to culinary school and all honestly, I hated it. It was the black and white checkered pants, the handkerchief around the neck, the paper hats, the starch white jackets. I was like, well, this isn't the party Dad told me I was throwing, you know? And so my friend and I would run around town, Portland, Oregon, and we'd go to all the nice restaurants, but we couldn't afford to really eat there. So it was so funny. We'd sit at the bar maybe and get a beer and like steal menus, but we'd also walk around the dining room and like look at everybody's food on their plate, like we work there or something. And so I really kind of piqued my interest into that higher end food and the bounties of the Pacific Northwest. You know, we went to the farmers markets and that's where I started kind of getting it. I wound up doing an externship in Los Angeles at the Citrus. And that's where I realized like, cooking's an art form. And that's, you know, the Bourdain was telling us that young cooks were rock stars. And it was true. And it was in Hollywood. But the celebrities were like looking at the cooks in this glassed-in window. And it was edgy and it was raw. And we were like this army of just people that would come together in this chaos and make this amazing artistic food that tasted so good. And that's when I was smitten and bitten by the love of food. And I never looked back.
Yeah. So we are now, just in case for anybody following along, we're now into the chef portion of your four pillars in your bio.
We did cowboy. Epic cowboy. I did not touch on the base that I was Oregon State High School Rodeo Champion 3 years in a row.
Oh, okay. What event?
Well, because you're from Montana and there's that little TV show called Yellowstone,
yes,
right?
Yes. I've heard of it.
A little popular right now. Well, the thought is in Yellowstone, they have cutting horses and reining horses. Mm-hmm. Now, before Yellowstone, I could have told people what my horse discipline was and nobody would have known it. But I ride the same horses that they do in Yellowstone.
So you're those cool.
Those horses that slide and they groove and they're really fancy and stuff like that. That's what I grew up riding. So that's what I was state champion high school rodeo in.
Do you still ride now?
I am still a very good rider. We still have the ranch in Oregon. I actually just bought the neighboring property to it. So the PBRB, the Hawkeye Ranch, is in full effect up there. My kids are learning to ride and rope, and it's really fun up there.
Oh, that's so cool. How often do you guys get up there?
A lot now. Very exciting news. We will be opening a restaurant up there this fall.
Ooh.
I'm going home. Right now, all of the restaurants I have are in San Diego. There's Herb and Wood, Herb and Sea. There's Anime, Urban Ranch, and we have Le Coq, our French restaurant, under construction right now in La Jolla. Hmm. But my brother and I just signed a lease on our place up in Oregon. I'm so excited to go back to my hometown and show them what we do. The restaurant will be called Hawkeye and the Huckleberry Lounge.
Oh my gosh, I love that.
Yeah, so we have live music and we're going to raise our own beef out on the ranch. My little trick here is we're going to actually fatten our beef up on hemp. There's so much hemp product up there that's been over-harvested that you're going to mix it with the alfalfa hay and hemp. So I'm going to have some happy cows at the end.
I mean, what does that do to...
Probably nothing. I'm just saying it's marketing to the best, all right? Hemp-harvested beef.
You heard it here first,
okay?
I mean, you're a pioneer. Is this going to be in Portland or is it going to be
in Oregon?
Okay, in Bend. Yep. All right. I love that. So, I mean, how would you describe, I guess, your journey from what you were describing a few minutes ago, you know, Brian right out of culinary school, kind of finding his way, and Brian now opening up this beautiful restaurant near his hometown?
You know, it's obviously been a big learning experience, a lot of highs and lows. Chefs and cooks are kind of mercenaries. I worked in Portland, Seattle, Los Angeles, Santa Barbara, Minneapolis, Minnesota, and floated around a lot and really just learned the craft. And I figured out, you know, how to be a good chef, how to make other people money, how to, you know, make sure that enough people enjoyed my food to support the business. And then after that, I, you know, continued to push. I opened my first restaurant, Seersucker, back in the day, had the whole fabric of social dinings. We had gingham and gabardine and burlap and herringbone. And we were able to sell that for a really wonderful price. And now we have our new group of restaurants, the ones down here, Urban Wood and Anime and all those. So we're having a lot of fun. I learned to be much more than a cook. I became a chef, a mentor, and then with the gift of, you know, Food Network and TV and Top Chef and stuff like that, I was able to do a lot of marketing and really promote the brands. And, you know, I learned how to be a restaurateur. And now I'm becoming an investor. So lots of opportunities.
And what made you ultimately want to kind of dive into that side of the business, you know, versus just being the person that's, you know, throwing the party and putting out the food?
I looked around and I said, all these people I'm making money for, they don't know as much as I know. And I know the front of the house. I know the back of the house. I know the marketing. I know the HR, the PR. I know everything, right? And I was like, why am I working for the person making them so much money when I could be doing it with my friends and making money for ourselves? And we've been very fortunate to have had great success as restaurateurs. And we survived COVID and we're thriving right now. And, you know, going into Bend, Oregon is a massive lift because they don't they don't have the kind of restaurants I open, and they're not small. Our average restaurant is 7,500 square feet. We open big, powerful restaurants, and our restaurants aren't just the food's the most important thing or the ambiance is the most important thing. We are in harmony with your sights, your sounds, your smells, your touch, and bringing all those things together, because what we want people to do is put down their phones for a while and really enjoy human interaction and conversation, and taking hospitality back to that original concept of breaking bread and clinking your glasses together and sharing story, as they say in Hawaii, and really just laughter and having a great celebration of life.
Has that always been a focus of your restaurants, or is that something you've kind of evolved to?
That is all I have ever wanted to do. It takes either a very modest or a very arrogant person to realize that it's not all about being a chef. You have to be a business person. You have to be an entrepreneur. You have to be comfortable enough in your own skin to cook for the people and not cook for other chefs. So many young chefs are out there making food to impress other chefs or food critics or food writers, or, you know, that company that's named after a tire company. I can't remember what it's called. But, you know, when you're trying to cook for those people, you're forgetting about the guest. You know, I go in and I read menus, and there's stuff on menus like, I'm going, it's just too chefy. It's too fancy. Give people a great meal that is not just arrogant and ego driven, but just heart and soul. And that's when you can find success.
What's your favorite part of the process, especially, you know, opening a new restaurant like you're working on now?
My favorite part is talking to the people, finding out their happiness, their love, watching teams come together, the heart of the house, the front of the house, and watching those people really form lifelong bonds. And really, when people get it and they just sit there and you look and they're laughing and talking, and, you know, they're not, you know, overly taking pictures of food or ambiance, and they're just like, they're enjoying their conversation. That's when I feel the best, when the noise is loud and the laughter is big, and I can hear, like I said, the glasses clinking. That's what I want to do. I am throwing that party. I am bringing people together to celebrate life.
Do you tend to, you know, be more hands-on, or do you kind of let your team, you know, do what you hired them to do once they get up and running?
I have become the most hands-off person in the world. I read a great quote by Richard Branson the other day, that they're like, how have you been successful in so many different businesses? And I mean, by God, don't mean it, am I comparing myself to him in any means, but you learn from other people. And he said, I get great people with great, you know, work ethics and great story and great, you know, great people.
Yeah.
And he said, I give them the resources to succeed, and then I get out of their way, you know, and that's what I like to do too. I find chefs that are better than me. I find people that know more than I do. And I ask questions and I find out, and I give them the resources to succeed. And then I watch the flower blossom and I watch it grow and I water it. And that's what I do. I love to smell the flowers when they're in full bloom. So
how much does, you know, location of the restaurant kind of influence how you conceptualize everything from decor to the actual menu itself? Like, how much is Bend, Oregon represented in this new venture?
My business partner, Chris Puffer, and I, we've always kind of jokingly referred to ourselves as building whisperers. We don't walk in with a concept. We get inside the building and we say, what does this building want to be? What does this neighborhood want? Who are, you know, what is this going to be? Because I'm not just a French chef, an Italian chef, a Americana chef. You know, we're able to do so many different styles and concepts. And then we find the people that works in that concept. Like we have anime, our Asian concept right now. We have Tara Monson, who's one of the most exciting chefs in the country. She's a Filipino chef, putting that kind of street food Filipino in a high-end environment, blending together everything from island to Japanese to Vietnamese, and putting these things together. And it's just extraordinary to watch it all come together. So yes, the one in Bend, Oregon is literally going to be a celebration of the Pacific Northwest. You know, I cannot wait to do that. It's going to be almost campy, glamping inside, but you're not corny. It's
right.
There's a fine line where that can go terribly, terribly wrong, where Western can become spaghetti Western, and it's really putting all those things together. Because we don't want to make a restaurant that's fun for a year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years. We want to build institutions that last 20 years.
What is it about, you know, what you and the people you work with are doing differently that continues to kind of elevate, you know, the industry and help you guys evolve as well?
We bring in the youth. We bring in fresh eyes and fresh blood. And all of our chefs and GMs and stuff like that, they're partners with us in our restaurants. You know, we're trying to fold people in as owners when they're able so that they are completing and fulfilling their dreams also. That's hugely important to us. You know, you want people to have that passion, that connection, that drive. And hospitality is a fairly basic, you know, human, you know, drive. It's just getting people who care. Mm-hmm. And that's the hardest thing in the world, is getting people who care and take ownership. And if you have somebody, you can walk into a restaurant and the first 3 minutes, you know what their heart and soul is. You know if it's working. You can feel the attention to detail. You can feel like the life, the soul of a restaurant, the people. And that comes from the leadership of the place. And that's what really makes a difference in our industry.
And by, you know, kind of empowering these people that you hire, by, you know, giving them, you know, kind of a stake in the business. How much of a difference does that make, you know, in terms of just them, you know, putting forth their best effort every day?
It's the only thing that matters. You know, everybody wants to be seen and heard and accepted and cared for and loved and feel like they're part of the ownership. And when you get that, it's the game changer. Money cannot buy that commitment, you know, like just a soul of money. You want to have that ownership, that like, I'm committed to this for a lifetime. This is my baby, you know, and that's what it does when you have that.
Do you have a favorite restaurant that you've opened over the years, or is that like choosing a favorite child?
Well, Herbinwood, we pronounce the H, we pretend like we're in Australia or London.
Herb.
Because there is a herb, there is an H in it. Herbinwood will always be my favorite because it was after our fabric brands had been sold and it was our reboot and we got rid of a lot of partners we didn't like. And it was really the heart and soul of our favorite people and my business partner, Puffer, and I coming together. And that was the menu and the venue. And he designed his restaurant. He designed that restaurant entirely by himself. And we put our heart and soul into that. And that was the last one I would do, as they say, grind, you know, where you are working the 12, 14 hour days down there and you're making it work. You are going to lift it up and carry it up the hill on your back in the snow if you had to, you know, and now we're putting together great teams that do that hard lift. But there's something that when you know, out of the ashes rises this amazing thing. And it's just still a San Diego favorite. It's like she's 6-7 years old now, on pace to do $12 million this year.
Wow. I mean,
she's a big girl. And the amount of people that have celebrated moments in their lives that they'll remember forever is just magical.
That's really cool. Well, speaking of kids, you are the father of three children as we kind of move into that portion of your life. How different is raising children from raising restaurants?
Oh, my gosh. There might be. That's kind of interesting. I haven't been asked that one. There might be some similarities in there. So I just like to tell all those young parents that are so excited, like, you don't get the warning label, all right? You don't get the warning, all right? You heard like, oh, wait till the teenagers, whatever. Right? I have two 12-year-olds and a 14-year-old, and I see these little people, and they're like, oh, I'm going to have a baby. I'm going to dress it to be cute. I'm going to love it. I'm going to feed it organic food, and I'm going to make sure the sun doesn't shine on it, and all these amazing things. And then fast forward, I have 12 and 14-year-olds that have stinky armpits. They don't clean their room. Please and thank you were forgotten. They used to do it when they're like 8 and 9. They are lovely children then. And they have bicycles and they disappear and you have to track them down and you have to wait for them. And there, it's just a whole nother world of joy. They don't wear what you want them to wear. They dress like they're homeless. They have long, shaggy hair. If you want to cut their hair, you got to like hold them down. And there's a whole lot. They eat hamburgers and pizza and they live on candy. I can't stop it. I don't know. I don't know what I did right or wrong, but
they are going.
Yeah, they're going to be young pirates, I'm sure, because I think I was probably just like them as a child.
I'm sure you. I mean, you know, stealing T-bones and taking them over to your friend's house to cook them just to rebel, I think sounds, you know, in a different way.
But I thought that if I was that one, if I was the bad kid, them rebelling against me would be like studious and smart and dress really nice and, you know, be opposite of me. But unfortunately, they're following in my footsteps.
Yeah, I don't know if it works that way. Have any of them shown an interest in food as much as dad?
One of them likes to bake a little bit. One of them likes to cook a little bit. One of them doesn't want to do anything in the kitchen. But I will tell you this. Every show, I do not win. And if you're a fan of shenanigans, malarkey, you know there's a lot of those. Any show I do not win, they will, if they give me the audience and do me the pleasure of actually watching me on TV, they will tell me everything I did wrong and how they could probably beat me themselves and how I need to step up my game and how I need to stop using too many ingredients. And they critique with the best of them. Right. And they tell me they're the best. And I'm like, let's go. Let's cook right now. And then I get nothing, you know?
Yeah. What are some of the family favorites in the Malarkey household as far as, you know, food and dishes are concerned?
I'm a protein chef. I am just a true big protein chef. They love. But there's something several things wrong happened during COVID. But one of the worst was Anime has an incredible Wagyu beef program, right? Mm. And, you know, first month, 2 months, we put a lot of stuff in the freezer and we're reserving stuff. Well, after a while, I'm like, well, let's go down to Anime and get some of that Wagyu beef. So my kids started thinking that really great, you know, grade A, five, like Japanese Wagyu beef was just a thing, not like a luxury. And we started eating it during COVID. And now they're like, hey, dad, we need some more of that Wagyu. I was like, no, that's not the way it works. That was just a weird thing that happened in our lives. So they love the steaks. They love beef dinners. We have big steak dinners. And then we do a seafood Sunday where we're very fortunate to be here in San Diego. We have a lot of great local fish around here, great shellfish around here. And because the garbage gets picked up on Monday, seafood Sunday is the big seafood fest right there.
That makes sense.
So that's the healthiest thing I can get them is seafood from time to time.
you better keep a lock and key on that freezer at Anime, because if they're taking after dad, they might be sneaking in there and grabbing the Wagyu.
I had a big birthday party not too long ago, and then they discovered caviar is also very good too.
Yeah.
So they're ruined in that aspect. But there's no middle. It's like literally like pizza, hamburger, Panda Express to Wagyu, caviar, lobster.
I mean, it sounds perfect to me. I don't know. Aside from them critiquing, you know, any competition that you appear on TV, what do they think about dad being a TV star?
They make fun of my clothes. They make fun of the way I talk. They make fun of everything. I don't think kids will ever, ever think their parents are cool, no matter who they are. So I'm an embarrassment to them, even though their friends ask, like, what's your dad like? What's your dad? Oh, he's good. Can your dad cook me food? You know, I saw your dad. Can he make me a steak like that? And they're like, no, he can't. No, he's no good. So
he's trash.
they occasionally do. They do bring over. They have friends that are kind of fans. And the kids will come over and they'll be like, Mr. Malarkey, can we have something? I was like, yes, let's do it. And then their friends like me. And then they get mad at their friends. And it's just, the teenage things are very confusing, even for us that are not teenagers.
I mean, I think the moral of the story is you can't win, right?
Like, there is no winning. 100% no winning.
Coming up next, Brian tells us what it was like being a captain of the West Coast this season on Beachside Brawl, and later gives us behind-the-scenes scoop on why he loves filming Triple G.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets.
In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness,
because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Well, speaking of TV, let's talk about your role as captain. Now, is captain in your Instagram bio referencing the fact that you were captain of the West Coast season of Beachside Brawl, or are you a captain of other things as well?
I am a yachtsman. I'm a boatman. I've been driving boats. We've had boats since I was a kid. We've been water skiing, wakeboarding. So I am a captain, certified captain. So boating has always been a huge thing in our family. So we love to boat and have fun. And, you know, to be a chef is to be a chief, as is to be a captain of the boat also.
Sure. So you're a captain of many things, including the West Coast for Beachside Brawl.
Which the captain was up on my social before that, but I guess now it really makes sense.
No, really. Huh? I mean, you know, you're just like, you're just growing into your Instagram bio, I guess.
You know, I thinking and now realizing what my title was, I have no idea how I missed this. I should have had my team saluting me the whole time. I mean, there should have been like a pecking order and swab the decks and like a whole lot of stuff going on there. So
no, well, we're very excited for this new season of Beachside Brawl, and you're competed against fellow chef, former guest on this show as well, Eric Agipong. What are the key differences between East and West Coast food and flavor?
Who is that? I'm not familiar with that gentleman. What's his name?
Eric Agipong.
No, it doesn't ring a bell. No, he must know who I am, though, right?
Obviously.
The battle is fierce. The battle is real. I'll tell you that. It's fun. We will have a very fun season this season because neither one of us want to lose and we both love to win. So Eric and I've known each other for a few years now. We are actually on Top Chef All-Stars together, which is a scary existence living in a reality TV world. But yeah, it's so much fun. I've just been up and down the West Coast my whole life, cooking all the way from, you know, Seattle, Washington, along the Puget Sounds to the coast of Oregon, from Santa Barbara to Los Angeles and now San Diego. So just absolutely, seafood is my main driving force. That is what I excel at. I love shellfish. No disrespect, I actually love East Coast seafood as well. I actually like, don't throw me off the coast here, West Coast, but I like the East Coast oysters better than the West Coast oysters.
Oh, interesting. I like West Coast oysters better.
I like how hard the shells are on the East Coast oyster, and they hold the salt water. I mean, that's really the ticket right there. The plumpness in the salt water is what you're really looking for there. But to play in all those different genres, and as we cook this season, the amount of learning and education, and it's so much more East Coast. You know, he has such a diverse team that you forget about that the lower South and Florida and then the Caribbean and all the way up to the true hard hitting Maine and stuff like that. You have such a variety. You know, I thought the West Coast would have all the variety, but I really learned with his leadership and his team and their incredible cooking. I learned so much about East Coast cooking throughout this season. season. And I even learned more about my own West Coast because we had such a diverse, incredibly talented team on the West Coast also.
I mean, how do you approach your position in a show like this versus, you know, obviously competing or judging? You, in this situation, you are mentoring, you are leading, you know, your team of five. How do you kind of, I guess, approach and handle that?
I could have been more at home. This is exactly where I'm at. All right. So we didn't get cooks that need a lot of direction. We have incredible chefs, right? Mm-hmm. They know how to make great food, but what they don't know how to do is do it in a competitive nature and do it in a timed event with limitations or obstacles and all those things that Antonia and the guest chefs are throwing at you. Like, what is it? You know, you're in a box. When you're in your restaurant, you're cooking in your mind and with your team and you have time. Competitive cooking is an entirely different beast. And Eric and I both have a ton of experience in that realm. So I'm literally putting them in and we have to do a lot of cohesive cooking, menu planning. Like, what does this dish look like? And really going, that doesn't work in this. This works here, you know, and really guiding those people. And that's what I've been doing for the last, you know, 10, 15 years of my life, is putting these teams together and then making them cohesive and seeing a common goal or a common finish line. So I was completely in my element in this. And really using their skill level, but fine tuning it inside of them and going, this is what we need for this competition.
Without giving away spoilers, what are some like twists we can expect to see on this season?
I think I throw Eric off the pier several times. Oh, no, that didn't happen. That didn't happen.
Walk the plank.
It's just fierce and it's fun. You know, I watched the first season with Brooke and Tiffany, and they were great. And I learned a lot from them. But it feels like the competition's gotten harder. And I think the level of the cooks has gotten better. You know, as everything gets a little bit better with a little bit more seasoning, a little bit more time. And they throw some crazy, crazy challenges at us. And we're cooking in the sand. And we're fishing. And what they're doing to us is pretty intense. And of course, there's a lot of good gameplay between Eric and I, having our own little personal battles too.
How successful was Captain Malarkey on the fishing expedition?
Well, we could just call up Eric right now. I don't think we even need to talk about the fishing. Eric, you hold the fishing pole from the real side, okay? You're not the other side. And talking to the fish does not work. I was just messing with you. So,
all right. Well, we'll see that unfold, I'm sure, on screen.
What is humiliating is production did make us wear the horrible orange life jackets.
Right?
I'm talking like... I mean, I guess Leonardo would have loved one on the Titanic, but I would have probably preferred drowning to wearing this life jacket.
Those are the worst.
It's an embarrassing moment. Like, couldn't we have had something stylish, my friends? But I think, you know, Guy and Lando and the whole crew is just laughing and look what these guys will do. This is hilarious.
What did you and Antonia and Eric get up to behind the scenes?
Well, you know, we shot Redondo, so up in Orange County. We checked out a lot of really cool restaurants up there. We wish the sun was out a little bit. You know, we all had a little bit of a harsh season. Mm. It was a little cold out there, but really just fun running around that South Bay area up there. So many fun restaurants to go check out and hang out. And anytime you're on set, it's kind of fun because you do have long shoots, but then you get to just kind of relax also when you're not at home and worrying about kids and businesses and stuff like that. So it's fun and great bonding experience. We had so many talented and great guest chefs come in to judge us. So that's always fun to catch up with all your friends.
Of course. And speaking of catching up with your friends, you spent a lot of time in Flavortown Market as well on Triple G. What do you love about filming that show specifically?
It's my favorite show. It's so much fun. That grocery store is legit. I mean, it's not real. You can't really go there and shop. But it's a real grocery store. Mm-hmm. And I just love how they donate all of their product that goes, that's, you know, has the expiration dates to the local food banks and stuff like that. But when you get a shop in a grocery store, it's like your own, it's like, you know, you've ever been on a shopping spree or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I mean, yeah, guys got limits on money or letters, whatever you're doing, whatever the game is. But man, running up and down that alley, just like grabbing stuff and throwing in your cart and cooking and laughing. And, you know, when you do a serious competition like Tournament of Champions or Top Chef, you're in the zone because you better cook great because there's there's obstacles, but they're obstacles you can conquer. When you're shooting Triple G, you're just like, it's an afternoon delight. You're having fun with your friends. You're playing for charity, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And everyone's laughing. Things go wrong. Things go right. And it's just, it's like a giant playground for chef children like myself.
Yeah, it looks like a lot of fun. A lot of shenanigans. Which, as the real fans know, is Guy's nickname for you. Was there a specific like incident that happened, or is it just your general, you know, demeanor that prompted that nickname?
I don't necessarily know when the first shenanigans started being called, but it was probably back in the day where I was doing celebrity cooking with chefs with professional athletes. And I was with former Oakland Raiders fullback Marcel Reese, good mm-hmm. friend of Guy's. And we're in this competition. We're getting stuff like Robert Irvine, this baseball player, and these great chefs. And we're throwing down. We're in the finals. And then we're like doing great. I'm like, oh, man, I'm feeling good. I'm feeling good, Marcel. He goes, Malarkey, when we win, we're going to chest bump. I was like, yeah, Marcel, let's chest bump. He goes, no, Malarkey. He goes, when we win, we're going to chest bump. I was like, what? I goes, we're going to chest bump. And I'm like getting on my skin. I'm like, we're going to chest bump. He's like, yeah. And all of a sudden, Guy announces it. And he looks at me and he nods. And we jump up in the air. And he is 250 and a block of a man. He hit me so hard in my chest. My legs go over my head. I'm like 3 feet in the air. I take out like two cameras. I land on my butt. I think I break my tailbone. Guy falls out of his chair onto the ground. He's on the ground laughing. And if shenanigan hadn't started by then, it stuck that day.
Wow. Right? Wait, did that make the show, I hope?
It makes the show about every season. Okay. There'll be a blooper reel of me flying through the air. And you'll be like, what was that, Malarkey going through the air? Yeah. Anytime Guy's having a bad day, he just like repeats. He's like, then everything's all good again. So
what other shenanigans do you get up to on that show?
Oh my gosh. The most recent episode, another of the egg episodes where we're trying to feed Guy his least favorite food in the world, eggs, his dog, I can't remember his dog's name, chases me around the grocery store. Like, and it's a one of those little like
Yappy
French
dog.
Bulldogs.
Oh,
and
French
it's like,
bulldog.
It's
okay.
Coming after me. And like, I mean, almost took me down. So there is so many shenanigans on that show. And the amount of times I throw food at Troy Johnson when he's judging, everything goes wrong on that show. It's so much fun.
It looks like it's a lot of fun, you know, from watching it at home. So it's always good to hear that you guys are having just as much fun as we see on TV.
Back to another episode with Marcel Reese. As I was getting more comfortable with him and I figured he can't hurt me any worse than that, we're defending our crown. So that's how that one worked out. We obviously won and I broke my butt. We're running down. So in the olden days in San Diego, we used to have a football team here. It was called the San Diego Chargers.
I remember I covered them for years.
They fled us. They left.
They
no,
left.
No goodbye, no sorry notes or anything like that. So we're all a little hurt down here. But he was playing for the Oakland Raiders and we're running down the canned food section. And I'm like, yo, Oakland sucks. Because if you're a Charger fan, you got to hate Oakland. And they're in the same division as us. He took my body on the canned food section and we cleaned out the whole section. He just like, and I mean, it was the funniest thing ever. And it hurt also. So that's another fun thing we've done on the show.
Any other projects in the works for you that we haven't covered yet?
Yeah, I'm really excited. We have during COVID also, we came up with a oil line. It's called Chef's Life. I realized that so many people were cooking with extra virgin olive oil. I wanted to tell them what oil to cook with. Mm. So extra virgin olive oil is an amazing oil, but it's meant to finish stuff. It's not meant to cook. It's got a lot of flavor. It's very delicate. So we came up with Chef's Life oils. We're in Kroger's nationwide. We're in about 3,000 grocery stores right now. And we have a cooking oil, which is a blend of avocado, grapeseed, sunflower, and olive, the second press. And that the heat level on that is like a million degrees.
Wow.
So it's like, you know, Guinness World Record holder and stuff like that. Might be some shenanigans there, but it's the best cooking oil you'll ever use. We have that in two sprays also. And then we have a Chef's Life blending oil that has some extra virgin olive oil in it, and then some great grapeseed and avocado. And then we have our own extra virgin olive oil. So we shoot a ton of content for that, but Chef's Life is incredible. We have a charitable give back program to Golden Rule Charity. We have the new restaurants, and I'm shooting a bunch of fun stuff with you guys right now. I was just out in your test kitchens shooting a bunch of summer grilling things for the kickoff of Beachside Brawl also. So lots of fun stuff there. Life is full and magical. Kids are fun and exciting as you know, as they can get.
Well, it sounds like a lot of exciting things happening in your future, and we're so excited to follow along. We have a few rapid fire questions we're going to finish off with, and we have one final question for you that we ask everybody here on the podcast.
Oh, I'm so scared.
No, it's really easy, I promise. All right, rapid fire. How do you take your coffee as you're drinking it? Just nothing else, just the coffee. How many pairs of glasses do you own?
Oh my God, I have an addiction. I have a glass addiction. Jacques Marie Mirage or something like that. I have far too many. We're probably getting into the 18 to 20 pair now. So
okay. All right. Chef tool everyone should have.
A great knife and a spoon. I think that's all you need.
Yeah. Describe your time on TOC in one word.
Exhilarating.
Tattoo with the best story.
I have cowboy here. I just got cowboy.
Oh, nice.
I got our brand right here. We got an arrow. We got our medieval horse here. We've got some good ones.
All right.
We got luck and love.
Love. Describe your personal style.
Oh, I got this. It's James Dean meets Matthew McConaughey before he started dressing up for the football games. But actually, I do that fashion too.
All right. Favorite celebrity encounter?
Oh my God. This is, I don't know if that, there's a Kid Rock one, but I can't tell you all about that one because it was Kid Rock.
That sounds on brand.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a good one.
All right,
said.
We'll just leave it at that. All right, so this is our final question. This is not rapid fire. What would be on the menu for your perfect food day? So we want you to kind of take us through the progression of the day, breakfast, lunch, dinner, dessert, if you're a dessert guy. There's no rules. You can time travel wherever you want in between meals. No calories are counted. Yeah, it's your day.
Wow. No calories are counted.
No,
we can eat all the gluten we want. Eat sugar. My God.
No allergies. Yeah, nothing.
I don't know if I can put it in order.
That's okay.
But I don't mean to sound boring, but I do appreciate and love a perfect avocado toast. This is so California. You can slap me. I'm sorry, everybody. It's disgusting. You know what?
It is delicious, though. I mean, there's a reason why it's
like
so popular.
Tell a story. I was like going, you guys, when I do some demos and stuff, I'm like, you know, there's a secret chef hall of fame in the world, right? And it's where we don't get to tell anyone about it. It's like the secret society. It's like Fight Club. We don't talk about it. But I'm going to let you guys know because you're Food Network and you should know this stuff. But there was a day where there's this big sandwich and it was like bread and it was like turkey and salamis and cheeses and lettuces and stuff like that. And the guy was having a tough time making food costs. And he's like, oh God, I'm going to take some of this stuff out of here. He's like, oh God. And, you know, but nobody was really ordering it. It's like, wasn't as good as the original sandwich. He goes, oh God, it was just so expensive to make and stuff like that. He whittles this thing down. He eventually just gets rid of the top piece of bread and he gets rid of this. He gets rid of this and he gets all the way down to one piece of bread and an avocado. And all of a sudden he just puts a little salt and olive oil on it, extra virgin olive oil on it. And people go crazy for it. And then he goes, I'm going to charge twice as much money for this as I did for the whole sandwich. Thus, this is why this person is in the culture Hall of Fame, because they whittled down that giant sandwich into a piece of bread with guacamole on it, and we have been making a fortune off of it ever since.
Do we know who this person is, or is it just like
they're just the person?
Okay, so you're having some avocado.
Hall of Fame.
You're having avocado. Are you putting an egg on your avocado toast
always,
as well?
Yes. Okay. Post the 6.5-minute egg. Okay. Yep. Right. I have to have ramen, right? Ramen is just one of my, it's like the best ramen is one of maybe the dirtiest, greatest things I've ever had in my life. Proper beef, be it a Wagyu or a proper cooked ribeye is very, very important. Shellfish all day long. Mm. Everything from sea urchin to uni to spot prawns to clams to lobster. Oh, all day long. A proper corn dish. You've always got to have my kids are in love with Mexican street corn. Mm-hmm. So we do different versions all the time. And then I gave up alcohol about 7 months ago. Mm-hmm. And I'd never had a sweet tooth before that. But man, I have a sweet tooth now. And so chocolate and ice cream, Salt and Straw. Ooh. I love Tyler and the whole crew behind Salt and Straw. Great people. So a proper dessert has to be done. But then I also go up to those huckleberries and blackberries and stuff like that up in the Northwest. And that just blows my mind. Oh, I just love food. You know, smoked salmon, a proper bagel with everything, seasoning on it. Oh, there's so many good things to celebrate in life. My last meal, if I was like in prison right now, you know, which I probably shouldn't be, would be really big.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds, I mean, I think all of those things would have to be on the list, right?
So good.
And I love that you have, you know, some huckleberry represented in there as well for the Pacific Northwest. Because
gotta put it in there.
Very close to my heart as well. It has been so lovely chatting with you and hearing about, you know, your four, I guess, pillars. And thank you so much for taking the time and sharing with us.
Lots of love. Be sure to tune in. This is going to be a wild, epic ride. One of the funnest shows, one of the funnest crews ever. And the talent level of these chefs and their personalities and who they are and what they do and the different regions they come from up and down the East and West Coast is so much fun. And like I said, we have so many fun guest judges that come and hang out with us. And who doesn't enjoy a day cooking on the pier or the beach with a lot of friends in a friendly little competition?
We cannot wait. Looking forward to it.
Cheers. Cheers and love. Thank you.
You can catch Brian on the all-new season of Beachside Brawl Sunday, June 18th at 10, 9 Central on Food Network. Make sure to follow us wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss a thing. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please rate and review. We love it when you do that. That's all for now. We'll catch you foodies next Friday.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.